DecodingTheBook.com.
Well, once again, everybody, thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, February 14th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 10 to 15 minutes or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here for our Tuesday meeting broadcast. We'll be joined by Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com, also Sports Cheetah of WagerTalk.com. Of course, that segment recorded yesterday evening, so a lot of good thoughts in that one. Plenty of stuff for you to look forward to here on today's show. Before we get into today's guest, a few things I want to mention. First of all, over at bangthebook.com, I got that MLB season win total primer article up where I talk about the process, where I talk about how I've done in the past with these, where I talk about what your expectations should be. Now, of course, I'll give a season win total pick for all 30 teams. However, not all of them are going to be very strong. Sometimes there's just a very good number. Sometimes there's a little bit too much variance in the team's projected performance. I will talk about that. I always give a conclusion. But again, some of those plays will be stronger than others. So keep that in mind that, you know, while there's an overall record there, it's not like all of those would be, you know, picks that I would suggest investing in. I will talk about which ones I believe are my stronger of the leans and some that are definite picks. So that'll be something you can look forward to over there at bangthebook.com. Season win total previews themselves, I would say, should be rolling out here maybe later this week, possibly early next week. But again, I have to wait on the offshore numbers so that most of our readers and Bang the Book listeners have access to those things, because right now only Atlanta Sportsbook in Reno has those. But wrote up that win total primer. Also in the MLB section, wrote up some of the statistics that I use to handicap baseball, some of the ones that will be featured prominently in that win total series, just to give you a little bit of an introduction into some of the advanced metrics that I'm looking at. So if you get a chance to check that out, give yourself a little bit of a Sabermetrics 101 course there. I definitely recommend that. And I'll talk more about Sabermetrics and baseball as we go throughout these next few weeks on Bang the Book Radio. And then, of course, plenty of MLB content over at bangthebook.com. Bring in today's first guest. That is professional bettor, Mr. Brian Leonard of wagertalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Good. Good morning to everyone.
Well, we got a lot of stuff to get to here on today's show. I want to chat a little bit about those Atlantis MLB win total numbers. I'm sure you've gotten a chance to look at them, digest them. Anything that stood out to you off the top of your head that, you know, looked like it was off a little bit?
Yeah, there was a few. I don't have them in front of me, so I don't know exactly what the numbers were. But I thought Tampa Bay was a little bit low. I thought Atlanta was a little low. Oakland, a little low. The problem is over there, and I've been there when they've come out, and as soon as one person hits it, it puts it back in line. So unless you're really up there when the lines come out, they don't last very long. I was talking to a guy that actually, when I was up there, I met another guy, because it was really the two of us betting into it. And we got to be sort of friendly. We've touched each other up on Twitter. And he asked me if I was going up, and I said no. I said the weather's up there is really bad. They've had some problems up there. I wasn't going to go up. But he was, I believe he's from Sacramento, and he wasn't able to make it either. But he was talking about what he had liked, and basically we were on the same side. So if the two of us liked it, chances are everybody else liked it too. So the numbers that we liked weren't going to be there when we got up there anyway. So it's one of those things that you got to be there. Sort of like what we talked about when we talked about in the Super Bowl for the props. Sometimes you're lucky, you're the first one to the window, and you're able to take advantage of those, but they move them quickly. And that's the problem with any of this, especially if there's others out there that they could compare it to. And if they have an Oakland at a 66 and somebody else has Oakland at, 69 or whatever, they'll quickly move it if you think you're on that side.
And I mean, you can set me straight here if I'm wrong, but there were $500 limits on these in the past. I imagine that's probably the same number they went with here this year. But Atlantis is an independent book up there, right? So it's not like they're used to getting significant handles. So they're probably moving these things very quickly.
They are moving them quickly. And the one thing I'll say about Atlantis, and they do have an app. I don't think they're available on the app. But when I try to bet on the app, regardless of what it is, they're giving me $100 and $200. When I'm there in person, they'll give me $1,000. They're trying to limit the people who are on the app that know what they're doing. So they really limit you. And it got to the point, since I'm in Vegas, the only time I go up there, up to Reno, I would play cash and go into the casino and do it. Got to the point where the app was worthless to me, because I'm not going to keep money up there if all they're going to give me is $100, $200 on each game I want to bet. So, you know, basically I have zero money in my app right now because I don't even want it. That's the problem you run into it. But if, to their credit, when I'm up there, they will give me a bet of whatever I want. I've even been able to bet over $2,000 on a game, and they take it because I'm there. But they don't want the people from outside that aren't going to be gambling in the casino to get that kind of advantage. So
what's the time frame looking like in Las Vegas? Have you heard anything from the Westgate? Do you know if maybe Chris Andrews at South Point is going to put something up? Any idea what kind of timeline we're looking at for another couple of sets of numbers?
Not really, because I've been under the weather for the last month or so, so I haven't been doing a lot of running around, so I haven't talked to anybody. I would expect them to come out any day now. Usually once Atlantis puts them out or somebody puts them out offshore, they come out in the next few days. I don't know if there's enough interest in it. It's not like football where everybody, you know, puts a lot of money on divisional winners and, you know, over-unders and things like that. So maybe it's just not worth it for them putting them up that early. But you would have to talk to them. I don't know.
Okay. I was just wondering if you had heard anything, if anybody in your circles had mentioned anything. I imagine when we get some news, it'll kind of spread like wildfire across Twitter. So hopefully
right.
They will be coming out here soon and give us another frame of reference and something that realistically, I mean, certainly we give Atlantis a lot of credit for having these numbers up. And I actually had Steve Mickelson on the show last year after Atlantis put these up. There were some numbers that were pretty good. There were some numbers that weren't so good. And I certainly think that Westgate will narrow the market in terms of having some of the sharper lines. And then, of course, we'll see, you know, what the sharp sides are and then what the offshores wind up coming up with as well. How much of your baseball?
I want to point out that I give them all the credit in the world for being the first to do it. It's hard to do if you don't have anybody else to compare it to. It's sort of like doing your own power ratings without asking others what they thought it was. So I don't want to take anything away from them when they put out the first numbers first. I love that. Golden Nugget has done that. Chris Andrews over at the South Point has done that. That, to me, it takes some guts to do it. They're doing it for the publicity, but there's money involved. So I give them all the credit in the world for it. I'm just a little upset that I can't get anything on my app. So.
No, I completely understand. And like you said, I give them a lot of credit as well. I mean, when I had Mickelson on the show last year, he talked about how, you know, he's a really big baseball fan, and this is something that he started doing and then wanted to continue doing it. And I definitely do give him a lot of credit for that. And, you know, we'll see what happens, like I said, with the rest of the numbers when the market does open up a little bit. How much of your baseball preparation have you gotten into here so far?
Not a whole lot at this point. Still working on the basketball. I've actually spending a little bit more time on the football for next year, trying to prepare that because, as we were pointed out, you never know when they're going to come out with that season wins and that kind of stuff. So I'm trying to do a little bit of everything right now, but basketball is my main focus right now. Baseball, I'm going to spring training in a couple of weeks, so I'll spend a week or so there, and that's where I'll get a lot of my information for baseball.
Yeah, and that's the big thing about NFL and or college football, excuse me, and the accelerated timeline like we've talked about. With Chris Andrews coming out with some of those numbers in, what, early May last year, I imagine he'll even try to push that deadline a little bit more this year. So it does make it pretty challenging because, I mean, we know that college football and the NFL really drive the bus in this industry. So you got to be ready for those things when they come up. I mean, like I said, you're focusing on basketball right now. I want to talk a little bit about the NBA here first with you, Brian, and discuss your approach to the next 3 days. We got, three games tonight. We've got 14 games tomorrow, 2 games coming up on Thursday, and then the All-Star break. How do you approach these 3 days? Because you have to think that the motivation levels for everybody are just across the map.
Yeah, they definitely are. And I like to play on teams who have been to the playoffs, know they're going to the playoffs, and figure they could steal a few wins going in. In fact, I've always liked to play on San Antonio. San Antonio, to me, is like the Utah Jazz when I was younger, when they had Stockton and Malone. Jerry Sloan is the coach. That was a team where they had veteran players, and they knew coming into the season what their goals were. And I always played on Utah coming in and going out of the All-Star break. Now it's the same kind of thing with San Antonio. They're not as much of a veteran team as they were, you know, a couple of years ago, but they're still a team that going into the break and coming out of the break, they know what needs to be done. One team, the teams that I want to go against are teams that right now just can't wait for the season. And your Brooklyn Nets, the New York Knicks, those kind of teams, the team, especially the Knicks, because they're a team that was expected to make the playoffs and they haven't done a thing. Those guys are just waiting to go on vacation. And it's sort of like when we were kids and we were in school and the last week of school, who paid attention? The smart kids paid attention because that's what they did. The rest of us that all screwed up, like myself, a C student, a B student, we would just wait until the school could end, and I just couldn't wait to get out and, you know, get to play baseball or whatever I did when I was a kid. And it's similar to that way in the NBA. You just try to put yourself in the position of the players, teams that are like the Houston – or excuse me, the Charlotte Hornets right now that are just struggling terribly. They can't wait for that that break coming up, and you got some other teams that are really fighting it right now in the playoffs. And Dallas is one of those teams that, for some reason, is trying to fight to make the playoffs again and keep that up, even though they get knocked off in the first round. But hey, hats off to that team. They continue to give it their all. So if you know the basically the way these teams are, you could probably figure out who's gonna lay down the next couple of days and who's gonna come out fighting.
Let me play devil's advocate with you for a second here, because Charlotte was actually a team that I had circled going into the All-Star break because they have been playing so badly. And my thought process behind it was, you know, hey, this is a team that probably wants to go into the All-Star break with some level of momentum. Now, they may not win the game against Toronto tomorrow night. Toronto, of course, on a back-to-back playing in Chicago tonight. But my thought was that, you know, Charlotte would want to come out and play well, want to try and grab that win so they can go, you know what, okay, we got a win, we're getting some time off, we can rest, refocus, relax, you know, get back to this thing after the break. But you're looking at it from the other side where, you know, Charlotte's been so bad for so long now that they just want this thing to be over temporarily.
Yeah, it's – I can agree with both sides. They just played Philadelphia. Now, if they had got that victory, I think it would have been something to build on. But now, losing to Philadelphia, it's like one of those things where let's just get it over with and let's just sit back and regroup and then come back after the All-Star break. That's at least the way I would think if I was on that team.
Okay. Well, I mean, and that's the whole thing I've talked about and preached on this show here is being able to get the perspectives of a bunch of different people. And then, you know, then it's up to our listeners to decide what works for them. So, I mean, we could see, I would say that we probably see a fairly sharp split on this game in terms of the influential guys out there that are moving lines around possibly being on both sides of this game.
Very well could be.
All right, well, let's talk about the other games that are coming up here on Wednesday night. How about this Pacers-Cavaliers game? I mean, the Cavs, generally speaking, when they go to Indiana, they don't play very well in Indianapolis, but they were able to pick up that last win. Now Kevin Love out 6 weeks. That was some breaking news that hit the wire just before we started recording today's show. So they're obviously going to be down Kevin Love. It's a back-to-back. LeBron has to go down to New Orleans and do all the All-Star game festivities and all that stuff. And one of the really important things I hope our listeners got from yesterday's show that Philip Ross and Reich talked about from Orlando Magic Daily, you know, these guys have to go down there and take a bunch of business meetings as well. They're talking with sponsors. They're trying to set up deals. It's a tiring weekend to go and play in the All-Star game. It's hardly relaxing. So in terms of the Cavaliers here, you know, what sort of effort, what sort of lineup do you think we'll see tomorrow night?
With the Cavs, you never know. We just had that game a couple days ago where the line was at 12, then they come back and they were favored by 1.5. It's so hard right now to put your money on the Cavaliers or going against the Cavaliers knowing what's going on. You know, I watch every Cleveland game. And if there's ball movement and they get a lot of assists in a game, I don't think anybody could beat them other than the Golden State Warriors. There's other times they're just not moving the ball. LeBron's throwing bad passes. It's amazing to me that they'll be able to make it to the Eastern Conference Final. When they seem to come in with a purpose, which is what they did when they went into Toronto, when Washington had that big 17-game home winning streak, then they played Indiana in that game right after that. They were playing with a purpose, and they looked really good. But to want to back them or on or against right here, right before the All-Star game. To me, there's better ways to put your money out there because you don't know what you're going to get. If Cleveland comes wanting to play, I would like to back Cleveland. But as you said, with everything going on, without Kevin Love in the lineup, Indiana's going to look for a little bit of revenge here because they just lost at home to Cleveland. But it's just too many variables in this game for me to want to invest my money into it.
Well, I like that. I mean, we have some people that are like, you know what, that day before the All-Star break, just forget about it. Just let it go. You know, you don't know what you're going to get from teams, but you're still out there seeking out spots. And again, it's all about perspective. It's all about talking to people that go about doing things in different ways and then seeing what works for you. I want to ask you about this then. This is maybe a little bit of a bankroll management type of thing. Maybe it's something where, you know, you feel like you have an edge on an underdog. We saw it last night. A lot of underdogs wound up playing very well. Orlando knocked off Miami. Philadelphia beat Charlotte in a game that you referenced already. You had, Denver, obviously, Denver. With a huge win over Golden State. I mean, nobody really saw that one coming. Certainly, you could see them covering the 11.5, 12, 13 that was out there, but winning by 22, nobody really saw that. The Clippers with a big win. Atlanta, huge overtime win in Portland. So it was a good night for underdogs. So it's probably a good day to talk about this. When you are looking at an underdog, are you inclined to throw, you know, a little percentage of your play on the money line as well?
Usually I don't. And you mentioned Denver. Denver is one of our three plays we had yesterday. And I love the spot for Denver because you had Golden State run off of those two big games. And then Denver, just a team that playing shorthanded right now. But if you looked at the way Denver had played them, earlier, we were getting basically four more points than we were at any other time. So I did like Denver. I would never have played money on the money line. I just didn't think that there was value there. I'm very happy taking one win. I'm not a parlay player, so I don't play a lot of money lines unless it's in college football or the NFL where you got a line of less than three. Then a lot of times I'll put some money on the money line. But no, on a 12-point underdog, I wasn't going to put it on. Even in a little small amount, because you'd have to get so much value on that. And usually on the money line, they're not willing to give you what a 12-point underdog should be getting. So I don't do it very often. There's some games I will, if it's a low-scoring game, low-priced game. But I don't play a lot of those big underdogs on the money line. No, I don't.
All right, last thing I'll ask you about here with the NBA, and then we'll transition over to the college basketball side. And this is something that we can talk about next week as well while the All-Star break's going on. But we can introduce this topic here at the start. Does your handicapping change after the All-Star break? Do you start to rate teams a little bit differently based on if you think they're going to tank for draft positioning or if they're, you know, going to flip the proverbial switch and make a push for the playoffs? Or do you still keep things kind of status quo?
Actually, for years, I kept things status quo, and I would wonder why my records in the second half weren't as good as the first half. And being out here in Las Vegas, you get a chance to meet a lot of legends in the industry. And one of the nicest guys I ever met out here was Mike Lee. Mike Lee's been around forever. I used to see him on the Jim Feist Show, Sportsline, that kind of thing years ago. And I asked Mike about it, and I said, why is it in the second half of the season I don't do as well as I had in the first half of the NBA season? And I'm a dog player. I usually play dogs. And he said, the second half of the season, the dogs just don't have as much bite. By then, you know who the best teams are in the NBA, and they're fighting for that position. The bad teams are basically just can't wait till the season ends. And so if you find something during the regular season, the first half of the season, where you have a nice spot for that dog, by the time you get to the second half, that team realizes that they just don't put up as much of a fight because they don't have that ability. They know they're not going to the playoffs. And I did. I went back and I charted it. And I said, you know what? I said, my dogs do really well in the first half. Favorites seem to do better in the second half. So, yeah, there is something that I look at when the All-Star break comes. And I'll be looking on, like as I talked about earlier, the San Antonio's, the teams that have had a lot of playoff experience building up in the second half, the Clippers, if they're healthy, teams like that, looking to play them in the second half because a lot of these other teams have just given up on the season. And you'll see a lot of teams that just the lines are outrageous for a reason. And they won't be able to keep up, you know, a team like a Brooklyn or whatever that had maybe some higher expectations or whatever will just give up in the second half. And That's a valuable lesson I learned from Mike Lee years ago, and it's definitely helped out my second-half handicap.
I guess a follow-up question then would be, how quickly do you see the odds makers adjust to that? I mean, are we going to start seeing a premium paid on really good teams immediately following the All-Star break, or is it something that they won't do until, you know, maybe around March Madness time when it's very clear who's out there trying and who isn't?
Yeah, I think it takes a little while to move it. If the public is all over the favorites, and then they find out that the wise guys are all over the favorites, and obviously they'll move it quickly. That's the last thing that they want, is everybody to be on one side of the game. So I don't expect it to happen this early, but it will happen in the second half with a month or so to go. You'll see that all the time. There'll be so many games that are off. You know, I like to play a lot of overnights. There'll be so many games that are off. It's just so hard to do your handicapping that early without knowing who's going to play and the motivation behind the games.
All right, well, let's move over to the college side here. And I had, maybe this is a little bit more of a math discussion than anything else, but it also falls into the realm of handicapping and bankroll management too. I had a talk with Sports Cheater last night before we started recording today's Hunting for Winners segment, and it was kind of informal, so I didn't add it to the segment because it was actually before, you know, we agreed to start recording. But the game that I was looking at was Baylor and Texas Tech. Now, of course, there was some late movement on that game. Texas Tech, I think, wound up closing as low as +1.5 at some places. They win the game outright. But the discussion that I was having was the number that I was looking at was -2.5, -113. Now, there were some -2.5 flats out there. There were some, I think there was a -3 out there flat as well before the line really started to move. But the question was whether or not it was better to lay the -2.5, -13, or flat against the -145 money line. So, I mean, I'm sure you don't have the math in front of you, and I don't know if it's something that you calculate on a regular basis, but in terms of those small favorites in college basketball, are you content with going the -2, -2.5 route, or are you just going to go ahead and play that money line at -135, -145?
Well, the money line is what I look at if everybody else has got the same number. If everybody's at -2.5, I'll look and I'll say, okay, well, let me see what I can get on the money line. If I could find something that's 10 cents off the money line on whatever the current number is, then that's usually what I play. I do have, there's books out there, and I have books on my shelf right now where I can go out and look and see what is the correct value to play in those games. But a lot of times you don't have the time, and I don't have it all memorized. So you don't have the time to look at it. So if I go across and there's a team I want to play and all the lines are the same, I can't get a half point edge on anything, I will look at the money line. And if there's a money line that's lesser, that's what I'll go. But I don't know if that helps what you're looking for, but that's usually how I treat it.
No, that helps. I mean, and like you said, it is listed for you. You can find resources out there that do have it. And I know that if you Google it, you can find it on some of the other sites that are out there. But I guess a follow-up question then to that would be, you know, one of the things that I was looking at, one of the reasons it kind of popped into my mind was Texas Tech has played some very close games here recently. They lost by 1 to Kansas on Saturday. They lost by, I think, 2 to TCU the game before that. So this is a team that's got a knack for playing close games. Is that kind of a fallacy? I mean, just because they play some close games, it's not a predictive thing. So was I overthinking it with this example in terms of looking at either the short price or the money line?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was just a small sample size type of thing. You'll find that a lot in college football, since you only get 12 games on the season, teams that are able to make it close but can't get over the hump, that kind of stuff. I think it's just all small sample sizes. You just got to treat it as a numbers game and go from there, whichever you can get the best value on. You know, you find certain teams in the NBA, younger teams usually, that are able to stick close to teams, but they can't get over the hump because they just don't know how to win. That may have a little bit more predictive value, but then again, it's such a small sample size. I wouldn't really concern myself with it.
I want to ask you another college basketball topic here, and then I'll ask you a couple of general basketball points to wrap up today's segment. Motivation in one-bid leagues. This is something I talked about with a good buddy of yours, Rolf Michaels, last week on the show. Mid-majors and one-bid leagues. I mean, things are pretty important for them throughout the season, but especially here at this time of the year, there aren't a whole lot of mid-majors out there right now that have strong prospects for an at-large. Obviously, St. Mary's would be one of them. if they can't beat Gonzaga in the West Coast Conference Tournament, maybe one of Wichita State would get in. Illinois State, I don't know, they might have to win the Missouri Valley to get in. Does that change your thought process about teams like that? I mean, I guess the best example we can throw out is to talk about teams that need to get style points for the college football playoff rankings. These teams in these one-bid, mid-major types of leagues, they need style points at this time of the year. So do you factor that into your thought process?
Not really. In fact, basically everything I do at college basketball, since it's impossible to cover 300 and so teams, is my first thing I look at is power ratings. And if anything or something like that, if people think they need to win and they're going to put extra points on it because they need to win, I'm probably going to be against them because if I think the game should be three and all of a sudden because of the need factor or the need to run up points, they're going to end up putting the line higher, I'll be on the dog in that game. So I think I've been doing this long enough where I learned something every year. I'm starting to learn that the need factor, and I've known this for a long time in football, is if a team needs to win, they're a team you need to avoid because if they were any good, they'd be in that position already where they wouldn't need to win. And we see this all the time come the end of the season for the NBA, NFL playoffs. Lines are adjusted 2-3 points because a team has to win to make the playoffs, that kind of thing. And how many times the week after we look at that and they say, well, obviously they didn't deserve to make the playoffs. They couldn't even come out in that game that they needed to have. So I think it just gives us a little bit more advantage on playing by going. Basically, it's your power ratings. If you don't have any power ratings, there's plenty of spots online where you can get those power ratings. And just look and see what the line would be without the situation. And then say, is that really worth 2 points if they need to win this game? I don't think it is. The players want to come out and play hard. The opposition wants to come out and play hard. I don't think once the ball tips off, it makes any difference whatsoever.
All right, well, on the flip side, since we're mostly talking about, since that whole part of the discussion was framed around teams that are vying for those at-large berths, what about those teams that realize that their only chance to get into the big dance is to win the conference tournament? Maybe you've got a team that's sort of hovering around 500, maybe a game on either side, and in one of those one-bid leagues. You know, they understand that their only shot comes here in about 3 weeks where they have to play the best ball of the season for a week. I mean, we've seen teams do this all the time in those one-bid leagues where they aren't very good in the regular season, just happen to put it together for 3-4 days in a row, then all of a sudden wind up stealing a bid from whoever the conference favorite was. Does that factor in here at this time of the year where you've got a team, an example maybe off the top of my head, let's say somebody like a Long Beach State, for example, you know, a team that played a grueling non-conference, they have a pretty poor record, they haven't been all that great in conference play, but they know that if they have to, they can go in and maybe win the conference tournament. So do you feel like there are some teams that kind of do punt the rest of the regular season?
It could be. It all depends on your mentality, your kids, and the coaching staff. Personally, I think, yes, you will be looking for the conference tournament. I attend a lot of conference tournaments out here in Las Vegas. They have a lot of them out here from all different conferences, West Coast, the Mountain West, the Pac-12. And you can tell there's teams that ended the season like pretty much dead. And then all of a sudden they come out and give their heart in that first couple of games if they're lucky enough to advance in the tournament. So it definitely does make a difference. But I don't know, as a college kid, you're 20 years old, 18, 20 years old, do you really – your entire life, you've gone out and you've played to win. Are you really going to, like, take a little bit of it off in order to play? I think anytime somebody goes out there, they want to play and they want to win. Once you get into the game, so much of it depends on the practice going up to the game. And unfortunately, unless you've got somebody that's on the inside that knows the team is just not practicing hard, unless the coach comes out and says it, you're not going to know that. So it's sort of like a crapshoot, but it's definitely, once the tournament starts, everybody has a fresh slate. So you've got to give those teams that had the talent all along, and they just didn't put it together. If the Charlotte Hornets were a college basketball team, that would be one of those teams that you'd want to back because they do have that talent and they just couldn't get it together. But that's something you definitely have to look at when you're looking at the tournament.
Well, some breaking news here, and, you know, that's one of the nice things about recording this show live is that we get these opportunities to talk about some of these things basically in real time. The Orlando Magic have sent Serge Ibaka to the Toronto Raptors for Terrence Ross and a first-round pick. I actually talked about this a little bit, I think, with Cheetah in the next segment. I actually can't remember now at this point. But one of the things I want to ask you about here is Ibaka is obviously going to play a pretty big role for Toronto right away. I mean, you don't give up Terrence Ross in a first-round pick to have Ibaka playing 22, 23 minutes a game. This guy's going to play a lot. Now, you have a Raptors team that's kind of been struggling a little bit. They make this deal. It's a win-now type of move. So, in theory, you would think that the locker room is going to just sort of rally around a move like this, be happy that they got some help. But in practice, it may take a little bit of time for this thing to gel. So how do you play that situation? Would Toronto be a play-on team for you, or do you give it a little bit of time to see how things come together and if they can find a rhythm with a new player?
Yeah, it's tough. Anytime you bring somebody in at the middle of the season, look at what they did with Korver. The teams took advantage of Korver's poor defense the first few games, and the Cavs did not play well. Then all of a sudden they got Korver into the spots where he can hit. You know, he scored 29 the other day. So it takes a while. Anytime you bring anybody who's a key ingredient to your offense into practice, so it's going to take him a while. One of the problems Toronto's had is DeRozan's been hurt a lot. So, and he's one of the two key players on that team. So now they've got not only bringing in the new guy from the outside, but DeRozan's only played a couple games since he's come back. So basically they've got two guys that need to get back in there and play in this situation. So it's a little bit of a, in the long run, definitely Toronto, it's going to help them, and it's a great trade on their part for this year. But it's going to take a while to get used to playing together.
All right, and then the last question for today's segment here, and again, this is just a general basketball handicapping thing, although you may want to break it down into leagues once you hear what I'm about to ask here. This is something I talked about with Ralph Michaels last week. I want to get your thoughts on it as well. I had a listener ask about buying points and if it was profitable. And of course, you know, I said, yeah, in the NFL and college football around key numbers, it certainly can be, depending on the value you're getting, depending on the juice of, you know, the actual line, things of that sort. Is buying points anything you'd recommend in either the NBA or college basketball?
No. You could tease. There is some sort of in the NBA from 5 to 8. You could tease from 5 to 8, and it's worth it if you're laying 110 and you get like a half a point better to start. But other than that, it's not worth buying points or teasing in the NBA or college basketball. At least from all the information that I've read, the people that I talk to, it's just not worth it. You know, it's one of our games last night landed basically on the number or half point off. So you're going to remember those type of things if you don't win it. But in reality, if you were to just add 10 cents onto any game that you were going to bet and at the end of the year looked, you'd be down if you were buying points. So it's not worth it. I did want to talk about, before we hang up, I did want to talk about what happened last Tuesday. I gave all of your clients that emailed me the plays for last Tuesday, and we stunk. We went 1-6 on those plays. Just a horrible day. One was a terrible handicap, but the other games were all, as I would consider, coin flips. But it was just a one and six day, and it didn't work out well. And of course, since then we've been on a terrific run. But that happens. That's why you got to look at. You can't look at small sample sizes. You got to look at big sample sizes. And obviously, I felt horrendous for everybody who joined us for that day, and the people that stuck around and bought the place for the rest of the week. They've got their money back and more. But it's just variance. So anytime you're playing your games one day, a week, a month, it's all variance. You're going to try, you know, Cheetah and I have talked about this before. We're both winning handicappers in the long run. We would rather have somebody sign up for a long-term package, but a lot of people don't want to do that. Unfortunately, I shit the bed when I gave the clients the 1-6 that day, and I wanted to apologize for them. But keep in mind, we're in it for the long haul, and you know, one of the things that I agree with what you've done on this is instead of giving out a lot of free bets all the time, we're trying to improve what everybody does. And hopefully a lot of people have done that and they didn't get hurt too bad. You know, you go with a loss, 6.6% of your bankroll on that releases for me on Tuesday. But once again, that's a small term and we get it all back, which we have, but it sucks when we lose. And I feel terrible when I've given those plays out to your clients.
Well, and you know, obviously it's not something that we ever want to have to talk about, and it is something that happens, and I give you props for stepping up here on the show and mentioning it, and I apologize for forgetting to mention it here until this point. But one of the listeners actually reached out to our @BangTheBook Twitter account and said that, you know, one of the most important things that he's learned here from this show is dropping his bet size. And he said that it's less stressful, and it certainly is. But also, you know, when you do bet a reasonable amount of money, and it's good that we were talking about bankroll management here over the last couple of weeks, those 1 in 6 days don't kill you as much as they would if your percentages or unit sizes that just aren't relative to your bankroll. So you do have that ability. You know, if you go 8-2, you got it back already. So that's something that's really important, and I hate that it came at your expense and certainly at the listener's expense with a bad Tuesday last week. But, you know, like you said, I mean, you do have those short-term variances that if you're not betting responsible amounts of money can be really, really detrimental for you.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, even though I do this for a living, the people that contacted me know, you're going to have bad days. You're going to have bad weeks. It just happens. Gambling is not easy. It's basically what we're trying to do is grind out a profit. And when you're grinding out a profit, you're turning over your bankroll every year or whatever. So you got, you know, 50,000 this year, next year you got 100,000. That's really what we're looking to do. And on any given day, things can happen. And unfortunately it happened to us last Tuesday.
So Brian Leonard of wagertalk.com, what's going on over there at the website right now?
I'm assuming we're going to be doing videos again tomorrow. I haven't got anything from the bosses over there yet, but looking forward to that. And as I said, I hate to bring it up now, but we've been on a nice run. We went 3-0 yesterday. Been having a really good college basketball season. The NBA right now is coming into form the way it normally does. So I'm looking really forward to another winning week of basketball.
And you can follow Brian on Twitter at BLeonardSports. Brian, thank you so much for your time, man. Really appreciate it. Enjoy your Valentine's Day plans tonight with your lovely wife, if you have any, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Same to you, and take care to everyone out there.
Good stuff there with Brian Leonard of wagertalk.com, and that's on me. He mentioned to me immediately following last Tuesday's show on Wednesday after we had all the results in from his card that he wanted to talk about it, and I'm glad that he remembered that. Certainly something that was worth mentioning there to our listeners, and again, as he apologized for those picks, I will as well, because, you know, it's unfortunate. You know, you have bad days at bad times sometimes, and it's just the way it is. But, you know, hopefully, I think we've tried to convey and tried to make it pretty clear here that, you know, you are looking for the long term when it comes to handicapping and betting. And if you're not in it for the long term, if you're in it for the get rich quick scheme, you're doing the wrong thing. So, you know, again, We try to give you all of those tools and methodologies to be better handicappers and also better bettors. And that's part of it, is being able to bounce back from those days and being able to bet responsibly enough that those types of days don't hurt you in a really negative way. And in fact, I had an article up over at bangthebook.com about some of those betting strategies with flat betting, you know, using Kelly and all that type of stuff. Martingale, I also talked about. And you can check that out. Check that out over at bangthebook.com. Sorry, still checking out everything that's going on Twitter here. See if there's anything else going on. On one hand, I love it that we have those things. On another hand, you know, they can kind of pop up at some very interesting times. And I know Kyle Hunter and I, who's supposed to be joining the show tomorrow, we'll see if he's up to it, still dealing with those illnesses that he's been battling. I don't know how many times we've done a college basketball or a college football segment, and then some sort of news breaks 15 minutes after we get off the air. And we just text each other like, son of a bitch, it would have been great to talk about that. But, of course, it doesn't always work out that way. But as I said, hopefully we can get Kyle on the show tomorrow. We'll also be joined by Wes Reynolds. We'll chat about the Genesis Open, formerly the Northern Trust Open, or the Nissan Open, at Riviera Country Club. Thursday, Brad Powers, bradpowersports.com. Also, Ralph Michaels from wagertalk.com. Friday, Rob Pozzola. Hoping to get Chris Stone from Fansided back on the broadcast. We'll see if we're able to get him for Friday's show. If not, I can recap a lot of the NHL stuff that we have going on that I talked about here yesterday. Big, big, big potential in the NHL this week. So hopefully all that comes through for us. Just want to remind you, before we get into today's Hunting for Winter segment with Sports Cheetah, which is now going to run about 25 minutes or so over the live window. So this will be a little bit longer of a show. But DSI Sportsbook, where you can use the promo code BTV Radio. They'll get you a $10 free bet just for signing up, and then an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. The other option, the Bang200 promo code, 100% for the sportsbook, 100% for the live casino. So maybe you don't have a Valentine's Day date tonight. You can play some live blackjack or something like that, and just, you know, get drunk and do what single people do. I don't know. I haven't been single for a while, so I'm very fortunate to have that. But, you know, for any of our listeners out there that are looking for something to do tonight, go ahead and play some live casino roulette or something like that over at DSI Sportsbook and see how things work out for you. Of course, be responsible with your bankroll. Obviously, you don't want to get drunk and then start depositing thousands of dollars to play virtual casino games. That probably wouldn't be in your best interest. But we've got one more segment left to go here for today's show. It is our Hunting for Winners segment with Sports Cheetah. Talked about a lot of stuff here in this segment, a lot of good stuff for our listeners. So without further ado, here's Sports Cheetah. All right, I'm joined now by Sports Cheetah for this week's Hunting for Winners segment. Sports Cheetah, of course, from WagerTalk.com. Preston, how are you this week, man?
I'm doing better. I'm over my sickness to an extent and excited to get out of the house this week, hopefully a couple days at least.
Yeah, get a little bit of that nice, fresh Vegas air out there. And, you know, I mean, things yeah. kind of lighten up a little bit for you here with the NBA All-Star break coming up, one fewer league to worry about for a couple of days. And as we've talked about, you being a pretty high-volume guy, you have a lot of stuff going on day after day. But before we get to the All-Star break, we've got three more days of basketball left. Of course, we're recording this on Monday evening, so we can't talk about the Monday night card. But we've got games on Tuesday, a fully loaded slate on Wednesday with 14 games, and then two games coming up on Thursday. But this is a really challenging week because I think that you have some teams that are probably looking ahead to that break.
Yeah, I think you always do it every league with an All-Star break coming up. You're probably familiar with it as well with baseball. And people, I think, try to play certain angles going into an All-Star game or an All-Star break. The NBA is a little more unique. I think last year was the first year that they did this full week off in the middle of the season versus before it would maybe be a day before the weekend of Saturday, Sunday, and the day after. Maybe it was 4 days. So now they're getting a full 7 days in between games. That's a lot of time to go without practicing with your team, or, you know, maybe they do get together towards that tail end of the break, but it is unique, and I'd have to go back and actually check historically. It's just something I'll probably do for sure in the next few days. But if I recall, a lot of those first half unders in teams' first games back were hitting pretty regularly, and it's only been 1 year of a sample that we had last year. And I'm curious to see how it plays out again this year. And you know, another kind of angle you can play too is some teams will play one game and then play a second game maybe the next day against an opponent that hasn't played for like 9 days. And I feel like they have a pretty big advantage too, maybe especially early just in their rhythm. And I'll have to look back again at how they fared last season. But my guess is, you know, playing on those teams in first quarters or first halves against teams that hadn't played in over a week when another team already had a game under their belt from the night before, maybe 2 days prior. You know, those are just little things that maybe kind of I'll take into account. Nothing that will maybe, you know, auto fire a play on because of the sample size over what we've seen or how it's been effective or not. It's only one season long so far. So it's just things to keep an eye on. But in general, going up into the break, I don't actually really take much of a significance for much of any team's situation. You know, a lot of teams are still fighting for the playoffs. A lot of teams are completely out of it. Some teams are fighting for seeding up top. And that's how it is, you know, for the whole second half of the year, whether or not there's, you know, a week off coming up with the All-Star weekend or not. I think teams' attitude or mental kind of state of how they're going to play is kind of the same from this point on, no matter, you know, what the team is in their situation.
Well, it's interesting. So with these games coming up here, we got three of them on Tuesday, 14 on Wednesday, and then two on Thursday. You're not really making any significant adjustments then, or I mean, are you trying to limit your exposure a little bit just in case you do read a team wrong?
In general, I guess I should preface all of this with the fact that I don't bet a ton of NBA after the All-Star break anyways. I just think it's pretty, and this kind of goes into, I guess, ties into trying to guess who you think is going to be looking ahead to the All-Star weekend or not. But trying to figure out, I think, in the back half of the, and it's more like the back 40% or 35% of the season, but trying to figure out who's tanking on which nights and there are teams that are tanking and who's showing up and who's going to be resting who. And it's just a mess. And I feel like more often than not, at least for me in the past, and this is something I was betting the NBA pretty high volume in general throughout the entire season. And I was giving back money every second half or every post All-Star break. And I feel like I was just flipping coins for 2 months before the playoffs. So I don't know if it was 3 years ago, maybe now I just stopped betting. I have maybe one or two spots that I really like before the playoffs start that I'll jump in and make a play. But overall, you know, maybe having 3 to 5 plays a week right now will be maybe one every 2 to 3 weeks. And then I'll kind of just go from there and regroup when the playoffs are set. But similarly to, I think, the variance just involved in a lot of the situational variables for the NBA, on top of the fact that a lot of these teams like the Nets and the Magic and the Sixers, they're basically out of the playoff picture, especially teams like the Suns, Lakers, T-Wolves, Pelicans, you know, Mavericks probably, the Kings probably, but technically those teams are actually only 2 games out. It's just a lot of trying to pick and choose when teams are going to show up or not, and it's too tough to do unless you have like a bunch of inside information. So unless you know someone that's like, hey, the Celtics are really looking forward to the All-Star break, they can't stop talking about it, you know, during practice or something. Unless you have that information, there's nothing really worth betting, in my opinion. You know, outside of, hey, the numbers say this is completely off by, say, 5 points on the total. So just got to play it and hope that, you know, they don't get affected by this All-Star weekend coming up in some way. So for me, yeah, I don't put any stock into it unless you know every player, some coach on every team and can get the information. I think it's just guessing work really at that point.
One of the things that probably has to be kind of frustrating for you is that there's not a whole lot of futures involvement you can do in terms of winning either conference or winning the NBA championship, because right now it's Cleveland, Golden State, and then pretty much everybody else, with the Spurs, you know, kind of there on the fringes. Is there any chance that you do think of a team here over the All-Star break to maybe throw some futures money on, somebody that could make a significant trade and possibly have enough to challenge Cleveland or Golden State? Do you see anything like that on the horizon?
Yeah, well, to be honest, I think in general, you know, I'll just give you 2 examples. Last year, I mean, I think I laid 275 or 300, or maybe it was both and averaged out to be like minus 280. But on the Cavs to win the East, I thought it was a great bet just before the year, because it was kind of like, it's the Cavs. They just lost in the finals and they were really injured anyways, you know, kind of a revenge spot, LeBron's second year back at Cleveland. And anyways, minus 300 just seemed really short because they're getting to the Eastern Conference Finals almost always. And at that point, they're always way, way, way bigger than minus 275 or minus 300. So that is like a lot of value. So, you know, something like that could pop up again. I imagine it's probably more like minus 700 or 800 right now. I haven't actually checked, though, to be honest. If you could find something around 300, that's a great bet. I think they made the mistake last year, and they're not going to make it this year. So I haven't even bothered checking, but I guess I should now that it's come up. But this year, one thing I did do is I think it was pretty evident for the Golden State Warriors. I think everyone knew they were going to be really, really good again. Obviously, they added Kevin Durant, and they were already the best team. And they were also injured themselves last year in the finals. Otherwise, they would have won that championship. And I just think when you look at the West, there's a lot of teams now that are good. Like the Rockets are a lot better. The Jazz are now playing kind of to the extent that people expected they could. Even the Nuggets are in the playoff picture right now. They've played pretty good basketball as of late. But the second seed in the West is the Spurs, and the Spurs don't scare anybody this year, really. In my opinion, they don't scare me. They're pretty soft. LaMarcus Aldridge, and then Pau Gasol's been injured. He'll come back, but they just don't have, outside of Kawhi Leonard, I think, enough to honestly contend with the Warriors. And who knows, you know, they could get beat by a Clippers or a Rockets. And, you know, even before the Western Conference Finals, it's happened before. I think they had a 3-1 lead on the Clippers just a couple seasons ago and lost to them. So in this case, there's nothing that worries me in the West. I mean, the Oklahoma City Thunder are broken up. They were the team that maybe could have beat the Warriors last year. They're not there. And I made a pretty large bet. I mean, it's sooner than you'd think. I think it was only 3 weeks ago. on minus 125, the Warriors to win it all. And it was similar to my thought process for the Alabama future, like week six or week seven when they were still plus 250. At that point, I was like, they could still lose a game and get into the college football playoff, take this, and it's going to be picked by the time they're in the playoff. And this is one where the Warriors, they have such an advantage now. Like, I think it's close to a 10-game advantage on the one seed in the East on the Cavs. And the Cavs are only like two games up on the Celtics, who we'll get to in a second. But the Warriors are basically always the home team in the finals now. And, you know, barring injury, they're going to be laying in the 200s minimum against the Cavs. So getting minus 125 just that was made too much sense. I can just, you know, play on the Cavs if I really want at that point and hedge off and either split up the profit or let it free roll on one side or the other. Honestly, I'll probably just let it ride. I think the Warriors win the championship this year, especially if they meet the Cavs again. But the one team, so kind of coming full circle to, if you had to make a pick, though, on a team that could make a move. A lot of people have talked about the Raptors because they've been there the last 2 years. They played the Cavs last year injured and still took them to six games. They didn't have Jonas Valanciunas. Damari Carroll, he missed almost the entire year and came back basically for that series and was playing, you know, like it felt like he only played like 18 minutes a game and he just wasn't in it a help at all. He's finally himself now come this year, but you can't throw a guy into the mix guarding LeBron and expecting to make shots and stuff when he hadn't been playing basketball for 3 months. So you add Damari Carroll, Valanciunas to a Raptors team that did take him to six games. And then if they were to make a trade now, a month ago or so, there was that rumor that Paul Millsap was on the table from the Atlanta Hawks. And I thought he would have been a great get. And the rumor was they wouldn't have to trade Carroll or Valanciunas or Lowry or DeRozan. And that five right there is really, really good five. Paul Millsap, all the advanced metric NBA stuff. He's always like top 20 defensively in the NBA and one of the best for his position. He's really good offensively because he can actually stretch the floor a little bit, but he doesn't have to, and he rarely shoots. You know, he's not like chucking threes very often. He still plays a cut and slash. He can play back to the basket. He's just a really good all-around versatile player. But then the Hawks traded Korver and said, okay, Millsap's actually not on the table anymore. We're going to make a push for this thing, which – now at this point, I think they have like the exact same record as the Raptors. They're tied for the four seed. So who knows if anything ever happens there. But the one team that could make a move, I don't know if there's really going to be a seller. Like, I don't think Carmelo Anthony's a big enough of a – like, Millsap's so much more valuable than Carmelo. You know, if the Raptors traded for Melo, it wouldn't do anything to me to even make me want to talk about them maybe contending against the Cavs in the East. So let's just throw Melo out of the picture now. I'm not going to talk about him anymore. But if there is a seller of some sort of player of some caliber similar to Millsap, he was just the example because he was the rumor a month ago. But the Celtics are the team that, one, have the assets even more so than the Raptors, who have more assets than you'd think for a team that's been really good. By the way, you should look into that. The Raptors have a bunch of picks and a bunch of young guys. But the Celtics are the team that have the most in any team really in the league. And they really could use another big. Al Horford, he doesn't rebound very well for center. He doesn't really like playing center anyways. And to do what they've done with basically Al Horford missing, I think, a month of the year. I know I was just dogging on him, but my point was they need another big guy because they're using like Kelly Olynyk Amir Johnson, and they're bigs, and they had to play a lot of minutes when I think Jonas Jerebko will kind of play a stretch four sometimes, but they're just guys that Brad Stevens kind of gets the most out of, but they're not guys that are making a huge difference. So for me, if they could get a big guy, you know, a Millsap, for example, just to put alongside Horford, who he's already played with for years in Atlanta, but playing now with Crowder and, you know, they haven't even had Avery Bradley. He's been injured for a long time. They've been starting Marcus Smart, who maybe is a better player off the bench. He's not a very great player. So to get what they've gotten out of, you know, their team, as injured as they've been, actually, it's been essentially Isaiah Thomas, who, by the way, is, if Harden and Westbrook weren't having the years they're having, Isaiah Thomas would be a midget that could be actually running for MVP, which is unreal. And he actually could win the scoring title still. I think he's like averaging 29 point something, and Westbrook's like right at 30. I mean, if Thomas wins the scoring title, I don't know what his odds were before the season. I've been looking, and I asked on Twitter last week, actually, and no one knew because no one was looking to bet Isaiah Thomas to win the scoring title. But I just – he's been fantastic. He probably isn't getting as much credit as he even should. But the Celtics, they're the team, and maybe it's because I bet them 8-1 to win the Eastern Conference before the year. I thought they were the one team that could really make a run, and if anyone's going to, you know, out-coach you, it's probably Brad Stevens. And I knew that the Horford deal was going to be solid, and I was like, you know, if they can make one more move for, you know, at the time Westbrook was even on the trade block still, maybe before he re-signed with Oklahoma City, I was like, one more big or one more player, like they just still need like that star who Isaiah Thomas has kind of become though. But if they can get one more player, then I like the Celtics. I'm not sure the price is going to be 8-1 to win the East anymore, but they're just a team to watch, maybe kind of follow their prices. And, you know, if they get a shot against Cleveland, or even if they maybe pass them in two games, they're the one seed. I mean, they're just two games back at Cleveland. So home court, and, you know, who knows what happens in a seven-game series if Boston adds one more player and ends up with the, you know, the one seed in the East.
A couple of things to touch on there from what you were saying. Right now over at Five Dimes, the Cavs are minus 305 to win the East. At DSI, they're minus 400. Boston's plus 975 to win the East over at Five Dimes right now, but plus 600 at DSI. So like anything else, make sure that you're shopping around for the best prices out there. Is Serge Ibaka that guy for Boston?
Let me jump in.
Go ahead.
No, I don't think he's very good. I mean, he's helpful. He's better than Amir Johnson and Kelly Olynyk. But it's tough. He's an upgrade, but he's not like a guy like Paul Millsap where I say they definitely could beat the Cavs in a series for sure if they added a guy like that. But that's an interesting name to throw out there. I know he's kind of been on the trading block. I even saw a rumor today, I think, going back to Oklahoma City. I will say Cavs at minus 305 to win the East is still pretty cheap. If you have Five Dimes, that's definitely lower. I don't know what they'll take on it, probably up to 500 or maybe it's just 250 to win. But that's actually not a bad bet. And then if you even wanted to just bet the Celtics too at plus 975, they meet in the Eastern Conference Finals, and that's not a bad two sides to have in the end. But anyway, that was good that you looked them up because I didn't know what the current prices were.
And right now it looks like the lowest price you can get on Golden State to win the NBA title is minus 170. So a little bit higher there than that minus 125 that you had. But is that still a decent number for people to grab?
My threshold was 150, and that's where it was 3 weeks ago, most everywhere. And I found a 125 here, and that's why I went and bet it. I asked them ahead of time how much they take, and was able to get a pretty good amount on it. I just, 170s, it gets to the point where, like, people think, oh, that's only, like, you know, 45 more cents. Well, it depends on, I guess, what your intention is of making the bet. If you think Golden State's going to win the championship and you expect that, you know, they're going to do it and you're just going to let it ride, then I would say minus 170 is still a decent price if you're just going to ride the Golden State train. If you wanted to bet it to hedge in the finals, assuming they just get to the finals, because if they get there, they're going to be pretty big favorites, even against the Cavs. They're going to have home court. At that point, you're giving up 45 cents of your like hedging margin, which then makes your margin, say the Cavs are only like plus 200. You only have like 25, 30 cents there to free roll. So, or even chop up, and almost not worth risking minus 170 at that point to win 15 cents on each side, winning 40 cents on each side and only risking minus 125. That's a pretty drastic difference. So if you're going with the intention of hedging in the finals, don't lay minus 170. If you just want to ride the Warriors and you were hoping for another opinion that kind of said, yes, they're going to win the championship, then yeah, I think you should go for it. I think they're definitely going to be winning the West. I think they have an easier path this year than they've had in the past, which says a lot, honestly. And people get on them for 2 years ago because of the way the injuries kind of shook out. But last year they had a much more difficult path and they still got through it, and they're a better team arguably this year. And the West is much weaker as far as a team that can really contend. So minus 170 to just kind of hang on to and hope they win it all, I think, is a fine bet.
One thing I want to ask you about here with regards to the NBA, and it's probably not the best timing to do this because we do have the All-Star break coming up, but it seems to be a league of streaks. You'll have teams that win three in a row, lose three in a row. Maybe they rattle off seven or eight in a row, and they'll kind of go in the tank for a game or two and then pick it right back up. Do you see any value to, you know, handicapping some of that short-term variance and trying to ride the streak, so to speak, or are you still looking – you know, solely at the large sample size that dates back to October?
Yeah, you have to, I think, look further back. There's going to be plenty of streaks or little trends that you'll find throughout the year. And, you know, if, like, you've been betting on the Wizards every single game for the last month, you know, you're probably, I don't know what it is now, like 13-3 against the spread, or maybe it's a couple more wins in there. But you would have to pick that out, you know, obviously early on. And there's teams that get hot, but it's similarly if you've been betting against, you know, say the Bulls or something, like a team that's been really struggling, or the Bobcats who have weirdly lost like 10 of 11 or 11 of 12, not the Bobcats, the Hornets. I apologize, the Bobcats sometimes, but Charlotte. So it's one of those where I think if you have a reason and an angle to do it, and you're doing it early and you're catching the full run, then that makes sense. But seeing that a team's covered five in a row, and then that's your reasoning for, you know, betting on them just because in the sixth game, that's not going to be profitable long term. So you definitely want to take into account everything that's been, you know, attributing to a team's numbers or a player's numbers for at least this season, if not other seasons, and, you know, use those to handicap an upcoming game and make a projection versus just five game sample. It's not enough to be concrete or something that can be predictive in any way. And so, I would suggest, as streaky as basketball is in comparison to football, in baseball is very streaky too. You'll have teams like, we've seen weird runs, like the A's is the famous one where they won 20-something in a row. And you've seen teams like the Twins lost a bunch in a row, I think, last year early on. If you just thought that they stunk and, you know, no matter what the price was, you were just going to lay minus 270 against the Twins. Well, it did actually end up paying off, I guess, if you caught it early. But in general, I don't think trying to do that, you know, across every team everywhere, it's not going to really pay off. And, you know, another one, I think, to kind of get a little bit more detailed on this concept is maybe just sharp guys, or quote unquote sharp guys, will get attached to some teams sometimes. And the numbers say this, but you have to bet it. Or, you know, a great example this last year was the Browns and the NFL, especially for like the first 10 weeks of the year. Every single Sunday, the Browns are getting steamed like 2 points, which is pretty gigantic in the NFL. And a lot of the times they were through like sevens and tens. And, you know, I recall one game, it was like 7.5 to 5 or something. And they just never were covering, but the guys were really, really persistent on betting the Browns because of the number. So on the reverse side, I wouldn't always just be a numbers guy either. I was fortunate and I only bet the Browns once, and it was against the Cowboys when they were getting 7.5. When the Cowboys were off that huge road Pittsburgh Steelers comeback win, and I thought the spot was really good. And if I recall, the Browns even went up like 14-0, and they still couldn't cover. That was the one time I bet the Browns. Other than that, I wasn't just like, oh, the numbers say bet the Browns, so I got to bet them. So there are streaks where you can kind of use, like, all right, the Browns stink. Obviously, no matter what the numbers say, I'm not backing the Browns. And that'll save you money too sometimes, kind of looking at it the reverse side of a streak. So, It's something you can, I think, I guess, incorporate is my point, but it shouldn't be your end-all be-all, you know, betting according to 5 or 10 game samples. It just won't pay off, you know, in the long run.
All right, let's use that to segue over to college basketball, because things are much different in college basketball because the level of competition is just drastically different from the non-conference to conference play. I mean, theoretically speaking, a lot of teams that are in the same conference should be fairly equal to each other. Teams in the NBA are fairly equal to each other because these are all professionals. You know, you have a much smaller gap there in your power ratings. So what do you do in terms of college basketball? Are you at the point where you're looking solely at conference play, or are you still looking at the whole body of work there as well?
Oh, I still include everything as far as the body of work goes. And one thing I've mentioned on this show before, which comes right in here again, I mean, the body of work is still dependent on, you know, the actual personnel that's on the floor, because in non-conference play, the body of work might have been a lot different than, you know, what it is during conference play, not because it's just non-conference or conference, but because they have two new players. Like, a great example I think I mentioned on the show was Miles Bridges at Michigan State, trying to use the non-conference games where he didn't play it to cap a game coming up. That doesn't make any sense. Or even for Arizona's sake, they added Alonzo Chair. I don't know, it's probably been close to a month now. He's a fantastic player. USC just added Boatwright, who's been out, I think, most of the year. And he's arguably their best player. They just added him, and they are already a kind of fringe top 25 team. And, you know, these are guys, when you do add them to your handicapping, or just when you're kind of dissecting or valuing a team, you definitely need to look deeper, because it's not just a matter of using the entire body of work necessarily. So in general, I think, yes, you should, if it's the same five that's been starting, you know, all year, or maybe one game here or there, a guy rested or got sick or had a tweaked ankle. But in general, if there were some really big gaps where key players were out for 2-3 weeks, whether it was in conference play or in non-conference play, you have to take all that into account, which is obviously pretty time consuming when there's so many teams in college basketball, but it's definitely important.
So what do you do? Do you just sort of denote that in a spreadsheet somewhere, or is it just something you kind of keep in the back of your mind? Because I think that's a really important point to make here, is the idea of being organized, of having your thoughts in one place, of keeping everything in order. What's sort of your system for doing that?
I guess it's kind of just a process that you're always doing. So I would say now, I would be confident now that my numbers, say, for Michigan State are current, valuing Michigan State with Miles Bridges. And I'm confident now with Boatwright that USC is a team that I am valuing correctly in Arizona with Trier. So 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago with some of those guys, different story. So I had to make adjustments, but you're just doing it as you're going all the time. And so, and I think I mentioned this last week, we were talking about just, I don't know if it was tips or something for college basketball handicapping exactly, or what the question you prefaced was, but I just said start with one or two smaller conferences and go from there. And I mentioned that I've kind of decreased the amount of teams that I'll regularly follow. So I do all the major conferences, and then I'm doing like Mountain West, West Coast, and the Big West. So I still have plenty of teams to be worrying about, but there are a bunch of conferences and smaller schools that I just haven't actually really been following, outside of one team that I think is really good that we backed actually again on Saturday. It was the third time we backed them this year, and we're 3-0. It's Tennessee Chattanooga. They've been weirdly they've kind of lost some games they shouldn't, but they're the team, I think, once they get into their conference tournament, they're going to win the conference tournament, and I think a team that could make like a Sweet 16 run. So I followed them, and that's just really, they're just the only other team I've kind of attention to on the side. But yeah, the process is kind of just something that I know today my numbers on a lot of the teams are going to be current on where they are today. But if, say, so-and-so is, you know, ruled out for this game, then yeah, I got to kind of sit back, take a look. Okay, have there been any other games this year where, for example, Vanderbilt played Arkansas, I think like a week ago, and Fisher was ruled out like really short before tip. And I'd already bet Arkansas actually, and so my number ended up looking like really good. And then Arkansas got crushed. Vanderbilt just killed them anyway. So it doesn't always really, you know, work out one way or the other. And it's not like science. You know, players over time should offer either positive or negative value to a team's expected performance. But it's, you know, it's still a gamble from a one game to one game sense. So in a lot of those games, the point of bringing that up, in a lot of those games where there's maybe one guy just like all of a sudden scratched, or one guy that's out, and even if you knew the night before when you made a bet, I just wouldn't even make that bet in the first place. I think in a lot of those games when there is a guy out, and I mean, for me, it's like, what's the point of really trying to see if there's something to be had here? I'm just going to kind of wait and see how the team responds and maybe use that to my advantage in the future. But a lot of times when there are guys missing now, or resting in conference or just out for injury, I generally just stay away and kind of just use the data from the game to my advantage going forward. So that's kind of the full-rounded answer there. But I think a lot of people in general, last thing I wanted to say is, they probably overreact, to, especially at the college level, to a single player. They say that about the NBA, you know, like LeBron sitting, is he really worth 4 points or whatever to spread? Or you saw, oh, great example, I think LeBron, Love, and Kyrie Irving were all going to sit against Oklahoma City like 5 or 6 days ago. They were plus 11.5 on the road. And then they announced actually we're going to play. And all of a sudden, I think it was like one. It was like basically a pick. So are those three players really worth 11.5 points? You know, it's just like you rarely see a move like that an hour or two before tip. But in college, more so, I want to say, unless it's like an absolute stud star guy that's going to be going to the NBA, you know, it's very systematic, especially in smaller conferences with smaller teams with players that are kind of all similar. It's, you know, who has the better coach, who has a better philosophy? How does this team kind of, you know, play together? What's the chemistry like? And, you know, plugging a guy in and out, no matter who it is, whether he's a starter or, you know, a senior or a sophomore, a lot of times doesn't matter nearly as much as people expect. So that's kind of the one thing I just wanted to end that with, is when you are adjusting for stuff like that, I would just kind of err to the side of caution and not overreacting and just kind of taking it for what it is. And just, for me, staying away and kind of using that information going forward.
We're about 4 weeks away from Selection Sunday now, and you mentioned that you're focusing on the Big West quite a bit, and I think this is a good conference to talk about this type of, I don't know if I want to call it a handicapping angle, so to speak, but this is going to be a one-bid league. Whoever wins the conference tournament is going to get in. So in terms of that mindset, you know, do you feel like there are times where in those one-bid leagues, yeah, you'll have teams that just kind of limp along here and sort of try to load themselves up for the conference tournament? I mean, is there a team that sometimes comes to the forefront to where you go, you know what, I don't think this team is going to be that motivated in the regular season. They know their only shot is to win 3 games in 3 days or 4 games in 4 days or whatever the case is in the conference tournament. Do you seem to notice that in those smaller conferences here starting around this time of the year?
Yeah, you could definitely say that. Big West is a good example. I think it's hard to really know for sure. But one great example is the Big West, because UC Irvine, I think, is clear and away the best team in the conference. But they've been really, really, relaxed in the fact that they've been sitting, I think it's Luke Nelson, arguably their best player. For some reason, I wanted to say Luke Fisher, but I believe that's a different player. So Luke Nelson, I believe he's the Irvine Luke that I'm thinking of. He's their best player, but he's been back now for a few games. So they were really, really relaxed in their first, I think it was 7 or 8 conference games. It's kind of, he was always day-to-day, always questionable. They really just didn't play him for a long time. And I think it's because of that exactly. They knew they are probably the best team, but whether they win every single game in the conference regular season doesn't even matter. They're not going to get an at-large bid to the conference tournament. They need to win the Big West tournament. And no matter where they really are seated either, it doesn't matter, because they're just going to be healthy and strong and ready to attack whoever that is. So I think right now they actually sit in second behind UC Davis. And I think Cal State Northridge is right there. Hawaii was a game behind, but they just beat Hawaii. And so now they've kind of separated themselves from them a little bit. But I think Irvine's clear in a way the team that's going to win the Big West tournament, and they've played it perfectly as far as the coaching and resting some key guys and just not forcing it during the regular season.
I want to ask you about the West Coast Conference then too, because you mentioned this one, and for St. Mary's, you know, I mean, obviously they would have really liked to have that game against Gonzaga at home. That's one that would have clearly put them in the tournament. Now we're not so sure. I mean, they should probably get into the tournament. They should have been in it last year too. But, you know, this is a situation where they've got 4 games left. Then they've got a shot at Gonzaga again, probably in the West Coast Conference tournament. What do you expect from them over the next 4 games? I mean, are they going to have enough incentive to go out there and blow people out like the numbers are going to force them to? Or do you think that they just kind of gear this thing up for that conference tournament?
Well, they certainly have incentive to try to blow teams out. They're not a team that necessarily always does, because they play a slower game in general. So, you know, there was a weird game the other night. They played at San Diego, and San Diego just couldn't score on them. So they ended up beating them by like almost 50. And I don't know, that was something weird with San Diego. I actually was tipped off at halftime when it was like 32-9. And that was the halftime score. San Diego had only scored 9, and I was like, everyone was laying St. Mary's minus 3, 3.5, 4, which normally, I mean, it made the adjusted number on St. Mary's like way worse than had you bet them pregame. But it was just the sense that they were just going to blow the doors off the San Diego team. But then that was 2 days after they almost lost outright to Pacific on the road as huge favorites. So sometimes the way they play kind of keeps games closer, especially you'll notice in a lot of their first halves. And I don't know if that's just kind of coincidence. They make really good adjustments at halftime. But they're certainly going to be trying to blow teams out. They have a road game at BYU, which is going to be pretty much they're going to be slight favorites, maybe slight dogs. It's in that range where it's probably going to be picks. So that's a game that's like 50-50. But whether they win or lose, it doesn't matter. They're going to be the 2 seed coming up in the West Coast Conference tournament, and likely, very likely, in my opinion, that they'll be back in you know, that final game against Gonzaga for a third shot at cracking the Bulldogs. But and that, they're a different story maybe for another day. The fact what Gonzaga is doing, they're just covering every game all the time, and maybe an undefeated, at least regular season. But looking at the rest of the schedule, it's Loyola Marymount, then at BYU, at Pepperdine, and then Santa Clara. And I think for them, because they know that, like what happened last year, I don't remember if you recall off the top of your head, Adam, how many wins they actually had. I think it was at least 25, and they're going to have 25 to 27 at minimum. Again here, the only difference I think is that this year they do have wins, sort of wins. It's hard to say these are good wins when it hopefully comes down to it, which is what's going to hurt them. But, you know, they had a win against Nevada, who might end up being the Mountain West Conference tournament winner, who goes to the March Madness NCAA tournament. They won at Dayton. I think it was a road game, a true road game at Stanford. They beat UC Irvine by 30, who's probably going to be the Big West winner. They have a couple teams where they can say, hey, look, we played against, you know, so-and-so, and really just crush these teams that are arguably tournament teams or are going to be close to tournament teams. So it's ultimately hard when they lose 2 games all year. Or I think it's actually 3. But to keep them out of the tournament, they've been ranked in the top 25 all year. I wouldn't use these next 4 games, though, and what happened last year is some sort of like telling, oh, I'm just going to lay whatever number with St. Mary's, because they're not a team I think that really plays to blow teams out by 20 or 30, in my opinion. You'll have a lot of games where it's kind of Virginia. People are maybe more familiar with Virginia. I think that's a really good comp. You've probably only watched St. Mary's play like 1 or 2 games all year, but you maybe watched Virginia play for the last 5 years, and that's how they play basketball, where it's going to be like a 5 to 10 point game no matter what, it seems like, towards the end of the game. Even that Gonzaga one was, they just gave Gonzaga that early lead head start to start the game. But Virginia, they're always like in that range where, and it's who makes the 1 or 2 plays late, and they're so disciplined that they tend, and so is Virginia, they tend to be the team that makes the positive play late or forces the other team to make a mistake. So you'll see them winning by, you know, by 10 to 15 a lot. But then you'll also see them losing or almost losing to Pacific on the road, which was tied with a minute left. So it's just an interesting kind of, I guess, strategy, because, you know, math says that if you are the better team, you're supposed to maximize your possessions and then you have a better chance of winning. But teams like Virginia and St. Mary's like to slow it down and actually minimize possessions, which they think still gives them an edge because they're taking you out of their element, or at least a bigger edge than they would trying to play more upbeat. So I wouldn't lay a bunch of numbers on St. Mary's off the loss because they have to. I think what they're really going to be focused on is cracking Gonzaga that third time, and that's their sure in, obviously, to the tournament. And then outside of that, it's kind of out of their hands, and, you know, they'll just do the best they can do.
They were 27-5 last year after they lost the West Coast Conference Championship game to Gonzaga, and they did not go to the Big Dance.
Same thing. Yeah, that'll be the same thing. They're going to be 27 probably, even in the regular season, probably 28 or 29 if, you know, they win 1 or 2 games in conference. That's nuts to think you have close to 30 wins and you just back-to-back years and maybe not even get to the tournament.
It's remarkable. We'll have to see. I mean, I think it would be a shame to keep them out 2 years in a row with a similar record like that, but They still have some business to take care of. I think that game at BYU is very important for them, and then they can't slip up before they get to Gonzaga, because if they don't even make the conference tournament championship game, then they'll really hurt themselves. But looking ahead to March here a little bit more, anybody else that you've added to your futures board for the Big Dance?
Yeah, I added one team this last week, and it was actually, we already talked about him a little bit. It was when Boatwright came back, I wanted to see how he, I guess, helped USC, and right away he had like a career game against UCLA. He made huge differences again. And, you know, even that Oregon game the other night, they're playing the number five team in the country at home. You know, that was a 1-2-3 point game for a lot of the second half. And at the end, the last 2 or 3 minutes, a lot of times this is just college basketball or just sports in general for you, but it just came down to who made or missed the last few shots of the game. Oregon made their last 3 threes of that game. USC missed their last 6, I think it was. So the 1-2-3 point game turned into USC losing by 10 after some fouls in the end or whatever. So they were right in that game. They were 1-2 possessions flipped the other way from beating Oregon outright. And, you know, being a team that now jumps into the top 20, maybe 15, and, you know, really making a push with Boatwright there. And anyway, so my reasoning for betting it had to do a lot with Boatwright, and I think that they are a good team, and they've just played really, really well down the stretch in games as well. I've actually they early in the year were making a lot of mistakes. They almost blew a huge lead to Missouri State early in the year, and there was a similar kind of collapse and melt down the stretch early in the season. Then I watched them, and they've completely turned it around, and now they're actually just kind of playing at a new confidence, new level. Maybe it's partly Boatwright, but they've kind of turned it on in second halves more so in the Pac-12. And so I kind of wanted to give them credit for that. But the reasoning is I bet 200-1 because I think they have a shot to at least make a run and give me a lot of hedging margin. But the main thing was, you know, if they beat Oregon, they're 50-1, you know, today. So that was the big thing, is trying to get ahead of that, you know, +3, +2.5 dog. I think it ended up being +3.5 close, but you know, that team wins like 43% of the time or something. And so like almost half of the time, my 200-1 is going to be like 50 or 75 a couple days later. So I needed to take the 200-1 before that game. And I figure, you know, if they do lose to Oregon, like they did a close game down the stretch, it's probably still 200-1. I haven't bothered checking, but it's not like I lost out on value. So that was my angle on USC and betting it when I did. They didn't end up beating Oregon, but it's not the end of the world. They're going to get into the tournament anyway, and you know, they're a team that I think can definitely compete. So I added them to the list.
A lot of good insights today on basketball from Sports Cheetah of WagerTalk.com. Preston, what's going on over at the website right now?
Like you mentioned, just college basketball. For people that, I guess, stayed this long and listened, the one thing we did or I did post last night, people maybe remember that have listened to me in the past, and I'll brag about this because it's just goofy small limit bets, but I've actually hit the 3-point contest winner and the slam dunk winner 3 years in a row, each one. And so last night I posted on Twitter, the years prior I've like written an article and kind of done it that way. This year I just wanted to hurry and tweet it. I was bored last night more than anything. But bet Nick Young at 10-1 to win the 3-point contest. I think you'll see down to 8-1. That's kind of the range that you can find of the books that are out. So that's who I bet to win the 3-point shootout. 3 years ago it was Marco Bellinelli. He was 8-1. Then 2 years ago it was Steph Curry. And then last year, Klay Thompson, believe it or not, it's because Steph was in the contest with him, but he was +450 when we bet him, which you would never, it was just one of the most ridiculous numbers for the second best shooter in the league. And now he's, you know, +140 or 150 or 160 now because there's no Steph Curry in the contest this year. But the other outside of Clay, I think the next best shooter, honestly, and especially when you're in a contest like this, streaky as hell. I mean, Nick Young might be as streaky as a shooter we've ever seen. So he'll have those games where he hits 8-9 in like a half, and he'll have games where he goes like 0-for-13. It just is the way he is. If he saw it that night in New Orleans, you know, shooting for some ladies, who knows what, in All-Star weekend, 10-1 on him was like, that was just such a huge number. I had to take it. So he's my pick for the NBA All-Star 3-point shootout winner. And I think it's going to cash. So if it makes it 4 years in a row, that's awesome. If not, it's not the end of the world. But bet Nick Young. If you want to follow some college hoops, you can go to Wager Talk and do that. But I'm sure I'll be talking some more NBA All-Star stuff throughout the week on Twitter.
Well, of course, you can find Preston on Twitter at Sports Cheetah. Preston, thank you so much for joining us, man. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sure thing. Take care.
There you have it. There's this week's Hunting for Winners segment with Sports Cheeto. One thing I want to mention here before I sign off for today's show, sorry about the audio there. I realized it was pretty loud, and I heard a little bit of a noise there with the playback. The pre-recorded segment, I have a chance to edit, so I am able to amplify the audio. I know that sometimes our listeners talk about some audio issues here on today's shows. What I do when I cut down the segments over at bangthebook.com, I amplify the audio. So the live recording is pretty much the best that I can get it. The segments, I do amplify the audio a little bit. So if you are having some audio troubles with listening to the show, try to listen to the individual segments because they are a little bit louder. And we're just trying to do the best that we can here with the format that we need to use because of the ways that our guests call into the show. So it's the best I can do with it for now. But again, I realize that when we have Sports Cheetah on, there's a pretty big volume gap between Cheetah's segment and Brian Leonard's segment here on our Tuesday shows for the full broadcast, but should be a little bit closer in terms of the segments. So that's something for you to keep in mind. As I said, coming up on our Wednesday show, hopefully we'll be joined by Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com for our Handicapping the Hardwood segment, but definitely Wes Reynolds to chat NBA, college basketball, golf, whatever we can with him. So that'll be our Wednesday segment. So thank you very much for listening, everybody. Hope you enjoyed today's show, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.